Oh yeah, Global Citizen. This is Ethan from Real Life English, where every single week we take you beyond the classroom to speak English confidently and naturally, to connect to the world, and to use your English as the doorway to living your greatest life. If you're not listening to this on the Real Life English app, you're missing out on following along with an interactive transcript, which means you can click on any word and get an instant definition. And getting vocabulary flashcards that will help you to never forget the new words and expressions from each lesson. So we have that linked in the description. And if you have a friend who is learning English, then please share this podcast episode with them. This is the best way for us to grow, is by all doing it together as a community. All right, Thiago, so you and I have been working together for years now, and I feel like your childhood is completely in the dark for me. I have no idea what a young Thiago must have been like. So I had a random question that popped in my head, and I thought it could be a fun way to kick off the episode. So when you were a kid and you went to the zoo, what is the first exhibit that you would visit?
Likely, I guess, the lions, I think. I think the lions always fascinated me, watching the lions, just looking at them, not being too close.
You don't want to actually meet one face to face. I was terrified of that as a kid because we have mountain lions in Colorado, and I've never actually seen one myself, but they are there. And anytime we go camping, I would just be paranoid the whole night because obviously if you're a little kid, yeah, you're nothing to a mountain lion.
By the way, Ethan, what is the difference between a regular lion and a mountain lion?
Yeah, they're smaller. What would you call it? A different breed? Because they're smaller. They don't have the males don't have the mane, all the hair around the head, which is the standard African lions are famous for. I've heard in other languages they'll be called a puma. So that word exists also in English, and I'm not sure if it's a synonym in English, a puma and a mountain lion. In Colorado, you'll tend to hear mountain lion used more. For me personally, when I went to the zoo as a kid, I would go for the Arctic animals. I don't know why I found that fascinating, but the first one I wanted to go to is the penguins, the polar bears, the belugas. I wonder what that says about us. Is it like I'm cold-hearted and you're lion-hearted?
Maybe. Or, you know, I'm a predator at heart or something.
Did you know that it is possible to be fluent in English even while you still have an intermediate level? That's right. Many learners believe that they have to achieve an advanced level before they'll actually be considered fluent. And this is probably because many learners don't actually know what the different levels mean. Like, what are the details that separate one from the next and how to determine which one they are. And the truth is that you might need a much lower level than you think to actually be achieving your goal of English fluency. But before we get into that, we're going to go over what the different levels are and try to help you to figure out which level you're at currently. So, Thiago, what's CEFR and why are we using this scale today?
CEFR stands for Common European Framework of Reference, and this is the global international way to determine your proficiency level in a foreign language. We are talking about English here, so that's what it means, the CEFR. I think it's a much more accurate way, actually, of evaluating or analyzing a person's proficiency level rather than just saying basic, intermediate, and advanced.
Yeah, this is used for many different languages. I think pretty much every language that is an official language in Europe. It's a really great scale to know because even if you go beyond learning English, it'll apply the same sort of measurement to any other language that you're learning. And you prepared a short video actually explaining what each of the different levels mean, which I believe will be helpful also for learners to self-diagnose what level they might be at. So let's take a look at that.
The six levels on the CEFR. A1, you are a beginner. You have just started on your English learning journey. A2, now you are a pre-intermediate speaker or high beginner. You can communicate some simple ideas using simple phrases. Now things start to get interesting at B1. Now you are officially an intermediate speaker and you can understand much more. You can already communicate with some fluency, but you might still struggle to find the right words. Now, B2 is a great level because at B2, you are already quite fluent. I like to think of B2 as fluent with mistakes. You can live abroad, you can work in an English-speaking environment, and you can do many things at B2 level or high intermediate. Now, If you really want to master the English language, you have to consider levels C1 and C2. These are the most advanced levels of English. The words here, the vocabulary is much more complex, and the grammar much more sophisticated. Which level are you?
All right, Thiago, so which level should learners be aiming for?
Yeah, but that is very personal, and it varies from person to person. But yeah, Ethan, I think that what most learners mean when they say that they want to become fluent in English is not that they want to become advanced level speakers, but they want to communicate naturally and confidently in most everyday situations. For you to be able to achieve that, you don't need a super advanced level. B2 level is already great for you.
Even as you were saying B1 level, you're already starting to notice some fluency, right? There's a lot of situations. I've even had a guest on a couple of years ago, Shannon Kennedy, and she talked about situational fluency, I believe is how she called it, where you might be fluent in certain situations, but not others, depending on what vocabulary you have acquired and maybe how confident you are in a certain situation. So you might be fluent if it's going to the bar and having a beer and having a conversation with a new person, but having a presentation at work, you might freeze up because you don't have the vocabulary. You've not done that before. It's a new situation. So that's something interesting to think about too, is that fluency has nothing to do really with meaning that you're at a certain level. It more has to do with, in a certain situation, are you able to communicate yourself in a way that flows?
Yeah, that reminds me of that lesson we did a while ago, detailing the difference between fluency and proficiency/accuracy. Fluency is about your flow. It's about communicating without much hesitation and about successfully conveying your ideas. Whereas proficiency or accuracy is about your hardcore knowledge of the language, let's say. Your vocabulary range, your use and application of grammar structures. So the more proficient you become, the more situations you are able to operate in.
Right. We say a lot to here, start with why. That's part of our real life way, our method for learning English. And what you were saying before about it being something that's very personal, which level should you aim for? And that's a really great place to start, is why are you learning the language? And once you've determined that, we've done other videos where you can go deeper on that. But once you've determined your personal purpose for learning the language, it's going to be much clearer to you. Will B1 already be good? Do I just need to have some resources so when I travel, I don't get in a sticky situation or I don't get stuck not being able to order something that I like in my favorite type of restaurant and so on? Or are you the type of person who really wants to reach a high position in your career? And so it's important that you have English that really stands out as being confident and accurate at the same time.
That's it. Yeah, there you go.
And why might someone want to go for a C2 level? Is it necessary if you want to be advanced to go all the way?
No, not at all. I think that C2 is such a specific level, to be honest. If you want to go for an advanced level, C1 already suits you very well. I think that C2 is so specific that it depends on who you are and what you want with the language. Just to give a brief overview here, because the video we just watched was really short. So at B2 level, you are able to communicate successfully in most everyday situations, meaning that you can live abroad, you can live in an English-speaking country and go grocery shopping, go to events, meet friends there, no problem at all. You can even work in an English-speaking environment. You can interact with your bosses, with your supervisors, your coworkers successfully, and even give presentations, all at B2 level. I like to think of B2 level as fluent with mistakes, meaning that you are fluent, you communicate naturally already, but maybe the frequency of mistakes you make when you communicate is still a little bit high compared to more advanced levels. Now, if you have the purpose of learning English for academic purposes, for maybe studying, maybe you want to go abroad to take a college course, then maybe a C1 level is more suited for you, so that you are able to really follow a college course that is taught fully in English. So I think it's important to make that very clear. And C2, I see some scenarios here, Ethan. If you are super passionate about the English language, I think it makes sense for you to go all the way up to C2. If you are an English teacher and you want to really polish your language skills to the best of your abilities, it makes perfect sense to go there. So I think it's about being passionate about the language and your current situation. But for most people, B2 for everyday situations and work and immigration, and C1 for more academic purposes. These are like the sweet spots, I would say.
Yeah, I've heard also that the C2, I believe here at least in Europe, is what you would need if you want to teach at a university, if you want to teach a language at a university.
Yeah.
And C1, I think this is a useful way to think of it too, is that it's the level that people have in their native language when they graduate high school. So basically, you have the same level of the language as someone who's graduated high school, which is any adult who's living in the country and using the language semi-professionally or professionally, right? So I think C1 for many learners is a really great place to aim for if you're wanting to get advanced. B2 is a great place to also aim for. You can, like you said, you can even work. I think many people on our team, if they were to take a test, would probably be at that B2 level, and they really have no issues with their communication or with any of their work that they have to do, even working at an English teaching company, right? And that's really going to be a place where you feel pretty confident and fluent in your capabilities.
That is true. What you mentioned briefly there about the C2 for more advanced academic studies, that is also true. I forgot to mention that, but it is true. So maybe master's degree or post-doctor degree or doctorate degree, yeah, C2 is definitely the one to go there.
Fantastic. All right, let's move it along. So 80% of English learners stop studying prematurely, meaning that they stop before they've actually learned all the things that they need to achieve their goal. So we're going to look at 3 signs that you have already learned enough and can confidently stop studying. However, if you have not experienced all 3 of these signs, then you should not stop. There might still be more things that you need to learn in order to reach your objectives. So, Thiago, what's the first sign?
I'm going to try to draw from my personal experience as much as I can here, Ethan. The first sign I would say is you have been already immersed in an English-speaking environment for at least 2 to 3 years. And when I say an English-speaking environment, I'm talking about an environment in which you are actively listening to English and using English for at least 5-6 hours a day. Maybe you are living in an English-speaking country. That could be considered that. Or maybe you are like the members on our team who work fully in English. So if you are in any of those situations for 2 to 3 years, that could be a sign that you might consider stopping studying deliberately and just living your English.
So would you say that anytime someone is already working in English 4, 5, 6, 8 hours a day, that means they don't need to study the language anymore?
I like to be conservative with that. That's why I said 2 to 3 years, because in my case, I got a job in 2006 at a call center in which I spoke English 6 hours a day, 6 days a week. But right after that experience, I started teaching English. And my first years as a teacher, I was also studying still, especially preparing the classes. When you prepare classes, you have to study to teach the classes. So I think it was only after 3 years, combining the call center experience, 1 year plus 2 years teaching every day, that I started to feel like, okay, I mean, I think I can let loose a little bit more now, let go and just work and use the language every day.
That makes sense. Teaching is one of the best ways of learning. The reason I asked that question is because we actually were inspired to create this lesson because we had a burning question from one of the learners on our channel who said that they have this dilemma that they're working already similarly, I think, in a call center, and they're not sure, should I keep studying? Is there still things that I need to learn? Or is the fact that I'm already speaking every day for work mean that I'm good, I got this? And by the way, if you're watching this or listening to the podcast and you have a burning question, you can comment it on YouTube or you can shoot us an email at hello@reallifeglobal.com, and we'd love to get your question and possibly teach a lesson using it. It's always great inspiration for us. But I'd be really curious to hear the other 2 signs, because my answer for this person would certainly be an it depends and several other things. So I think just the working 8 hours a day or 6 hours a day alone isn't enough to say like, yeah, you've made it. you're done with studying.
That's true, yeah. How long you have been doing that also counts. And what kind of work is that? I mean, who are you speaking English with most of the time, right? That also counts.
Is it always the same script? Like, you might be very limited in your fluency. Like, you're really good at talking about this certain type of hardware that the company uses. But if you have to talk about what you like to do as your hobbies, you feel complete a lack of confidence in doing that, then it's certainly you're going to need to study other areas. So what's the second sign?
Take a look at the level you are at right now and which level you want to aim at or aim for. Coming back to my experience, after I started teaching, I got my C1 level certificate quite early. It was in 2008. So that was about 4 or 5 years after I started studying from scratch English, I got my C1 certificate. After that, I stopped completely, like studying deliberately. I was just leaving my English and working in English. 9 years passed. In 2017, I was working at a different school now, and the coordinator actually suggested taking the C2. And then I started to think, okay, that might be interesting, but that was 9 years later. And then I said, okay, I'm going to go for it. I didn't take it right away. And then I came back to studying. I actually bought a course book for that level, for the C2 prep course, and then I spent a semester studying for that C2 level. And then in December 2017, I did the test and I got it. So it depends on the level that you want to go for. If you are already at B2 and you are content with B2, you don't see yourself maybe striving for C1 or C2, then you can stop and you can just leave your English. Yeah, consume content, speak any chance you get, but you don't have that rigid regimen, right? Or routine of studying. Or if you want to go for C1 and you get it, you take the test and you realize that you are there, then it's okay. So I guess the level is a good determiner for that.
That makes a lot of sense. I did the same that I had pretty fluent Catalan. I was probably at a comfortable B2 level. And I just realized that it wasn't cutting it anymore. I knew I was making mistakes. I'd never really studied the grammar. So there was a lot of uncertainty that I had around, do I know if I'm speaking correctly? So I decided also to study for that. And it was a really great experience because I had just learned by exposing myself to the language, watching TV series, listening to music. And this was my first time really getting my hands dirty with the nitty gritty of the language, the grammar, the like connecting phrases and stuff like this that I hadn't had to learn and becoming a better writer in the language. All of these were things that were I was pretty green in, you know, I was pretty new to. So I think that it can always be a great idea to study for one of these exams if you're kind of stuck in a plateau, because it can help you to shake you out of that and to push you to achieve a new level. But I would say too, like since then, I've lost a lot of what I studied, because the writing, for example, my writing improved a lot, but then I write emails sometimes, but I'm not using it professionally. And so I don't have many opportunities to write. And a lot of the things that I learned for being a good writer in Catalan, I've lost. So there's the whole, you don't use it, you lose it sort of thing. So you might need to come back to studying again. I might need to come back to studying again some things that I learned in preparation for that exam, because over time, not using them, I've lost them.
That is so true. You used a couple of nice expressions there. First of all, you said that at a certain point, your level of Catalan, you felt like it wasn't cutting it anymore. What does it mean when something's not cutting it for you anymore?
It means it's not good enough. It's not fulfilling your needs. And because I was living here and my partner's from here and have family here and everything, I was like, and you know, I need to have the same level that a high schooler, someone who's graduating high school has, right? I need to be able to speak as well as the average Joe Catalan, I guess.
Average Joe, that's nice. And you also said that you were pretty green.
You could say you're ripe means you're mature, right? Mm-hmm. Like a fruit. Mm-hmm. And when you're green, it means that you're naive. You don't have experience. You have not ripened yet.
Right. That's cool. But you see, what you just shared, Ethan, about feeling like Catalan wasn't cutting it for you anymore, and then that's when you decided to go for C1, that could be the third sign. The third sign is, are you content with your current level? Or do you feel like your current level is not cutting it anymore for you? For example, if you feel like, okay, I speak English every day, I work at the call center for 8 hours, but I'm still using the same words all the time, or I feel like I could be doing more, I could be improving. If you have this feeling, then by all means, keep studying, even if for a moment, for 6 months or for a year, because it depends also on your level of contentment. How happy are you with your current level?
I would say too, to look at it not just as I need to study, I don't need to study, but as seeing yourself more as a lifelong learner. So you might be more actively studying for an exam at one point. You might be more doing the grammar drills or studying a list of connectors or working with a teacher to improve your writing, for example. That doesn't have to be all the time, but you should see yourself as a lifelong learner in the sense that you might be working hours a day, but there's still opportunities to improve. You might ask someone that you work with who has better English or who is a native speaker, you know, if you notice any big mistakes I make, could you correct those? Or you might, if you notice you're watching different TV series or reading a book and there's a lot of vocabulary that you're missing, it's still a good idea to try to gather that up and use a spaced repetition system to be studying those words so that you never forget them, you make them a part of your active speech. And in the case of the person who sent this question, for example, your English might be good for where you're at right now, but maybe someday you want to change your job and then what you're using now won't be enough. So you might also want to just think a little bit long term, what are going to be your needs with your English?
You hit the nail right on the head, I think, because it's about lifelong learning. Maybe at a certain point in your life as an English learner or language learner for that matter, you will study more than other periods of your life. But even in those periods when you're not studying so much, there is always something to improve. There's always something to be more deliberate about. Just to give you guys an example, those of you who are listening to us and watching us, I have been speaking English for 20 years. Ethan is a language learner. He has learned multiple languages. And you know what, guys? One thing that both of us have been very deliberate about recently in our communication here is using less filler words. The filler words are, you know, yeah, you know? So we like. Are like. So even at this stage in our lives as language learners, right, Ethan, we are still being deliberate with one aspect of our communication. So it never stops. Maybe you are more intense with your studies. At some point, here and there, but it never stops. The learning, the studying should never stop. That's the right answer, I think.
Very well said. So this has been a heavy topic. Hopefully you all have gotten a gleam of some wisdom that will be helpful for determining whether you should be studying more and what might be helpful for you to learn, what sorts of objectives you want to achieve with your English, maybe going back to studying for a proper exam and getting a certification. Let's move on to something a bit lighter though. Now, Thiago, we're going to talk about the recent Emmy Awards, the Emmy Awards ceremony that just took place this last week from when we're recording. And then we're going to be divulging into some of our, I believe our first job, that was what we were going to talk about. So our first ever jobs.
I'm sure you've been learning many cool words and expressions in this lesson, right? But let me tell you that if you don't review these words and expressions very soon, you will likely forget them. Actually, this is something that my students always tell me, how they learn words and expressions in content, videos, media, but when they have to speak English out there in the real world, the words don't come to them. They forget them. But don't worry, because there is a powerful system you can use to memorize vocabulary much faster. This system is called spaced repetition. Spaced repetition is a learning technique that involves reviewing and revisiting information at increasing intervals over time. The basic idea is to expose yourself to the information you're trying to learn in a way that optimally reinforces your memory. This is an advanced technology that works with your brain's natural tendency for memorization using intelligent flashcards. And we have made it easy for you to incorporate spaced repetition with the Real Life English app. With the app, you can learn tons of words, phrasal verbs, and expressions with our technology. This technology helps to review the words you're trying to remember by presenting the new vocabulary to you at strategic times. Thousands of learners just like you are already using the app to get confident, natural English. Wouldn't you also like to effortlessly use the right words and expressions when you need them? Now let's hear what one of our app users has to say about the app. This testimonial comes from Zobel. Zobel says, "This app is tremendous. I really recommend all speakers around the world to use it because it can connect you with different kinds of people." So if you want to go from feeling like a lost, insecure English learner to becoming a confident, natural English speaker who actually remembers the words you learn, download and try the Real Life English app today. I'll leave the link in the description, and I'm sure you will love it.
All right, so I was really surprised to hear that this was the 75th Emmy Award ceremony. That's pretty mind-blowing. And for those of you that aren't familiar, I think everyone knows the Oscars. It's the most famous, but the Emmy is the same thing, but for TV series. Nowadays, we have such an overwhelming amount of TV series to watch with all the different streaming platforms. So it's pretty interesting to see what sort of things won, to see if there's a series that you might want to watch or if one of your favorite series might have won something. Because of the actor's strike this last year, I don't know if you know this, Thiago, but they usually do this in September, but they postponed it. And they're just doing it now in January. But there'll be another one this year in September, I believe, or September or October. So they're going to be really short apart this time.
What's a strike, by the way?
A strike is when people, in a sense, refuse to work until they get better conditions. And I believe it was people not getting, the script writers, for example, not being paid very well. I actually wasn't so informed about exactly what was happening, but I do know that it was affecting, for example, a lot of your favorite series. The new season might not be coming out until 2025 because the strike caused them to be very delayed in production. So there was a nice excerpt that I took from this that kind of summarizes the main winners of the Emmys. And would you want to do the honors and give that a read, Thiago?
Yeah, sure. The Bear took home the award for Outstanding Comedy Series, as well as a whopping 9 additional awards. Beef won Outstanding Limited Series and 7 other trophies, including a historic win for Ali Wong, who is the first Asian-American to win for actress in a limited series. Succession's final season won Outstanding Drama Series and 5 other awards.
Incredible. Have you seen any of these series, Thiago?
I saw the first episode of Succession on HBO.
But just the first
that's
one.
It.
The first episode of the
just
first season.
Just the first episode. The pilot episode. But now I might be inclined to actually come back to it.
It's a great series. I watched it all the way through. But I wasn't so impressed by the final season. And I saw that White Lotus was also nominated for that Outstanding Drama Series. And I think that White Lotus, it was incredible, the second season of White Lotus. So I was very disappointed that Succession won out over White Lotus for that one. There's an interesting piece of vocabulary here, a whopping 9 additional awards. What does whopping mean?
I think you can use that word when you want to emphasize how large something is on a grand scale, like how big, how influential, how large it is. So here we're talking about 9 additional awards. So that's a whopping number.
Huge number of awards to take for one series, right? In Brazil, would you call the burger that they have at Burger King the Whopper? Is that their famous one?
We call it the Whopper. Don't you call it the Whopper also?
We do too. But people might not know why is it called the Whopper. It's called the Whopper because a Whopper is something really big and they want to emphasize how much meat is on that burger.
There you go. It's a huge sandwich, right?
Yeah. For someone who catches a big fish, they might say that was a Whopper. Well, I just recently saw Beef with my family when I was back in the States, and I really enjoyed it. I can highly recommend that one. It's interesting that a lot of the actors, such as Ali Wong, I believe, a lot of them are Asian Americans. And The Bear, I've not seen yet, but I actually added it to my list since I saw this.
Cool. One thing that caught my attention, Ethan, when I was reading the article you shared about the Emmy winners, I found out that Elton John, who is one of my favorite artists of all time, now he has officially become a EGOT artist. And EGOT is an acronym used to refer to a person who has won the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, and the Tony Awards. So yeah,
wow, that's incredible.
Elton John is the EGOT, one of the EGOTs.
Okay. So an Emmy is for TV series, a Grammy is for music, right? Oscar is for movie, and a Tony is for plays, for Broadway musicals, things like that. So he's been in a bunch of different media then. That means his music's been featured in a bunch of different media.
Yeah, he shows how prolific he's been.
All right, Thiago, tell me about one of your first jobs.
I'm going to talk a little bit about my second job. My second job I got when I was 19. That was back in 2006. And It was at a call center.
Putting an H to yourself.
Putting an H to myself. Can you guys see the gray hair here? Yeah. It was at a call center. Actually, the primary job was about receiving complaints. It was mm-hmm. an American company that provided cable TV services in the U.S., and they outsourced the customer service operation here in Brazil. Yeah. So basically, we were responsible for answering American customers' calls whenever mm-hmm. they had a problem with their cable TV service. And it was funny because most of the calls I would get were from the South area of the U.S., mm-hmm. you know? So I would hear stuff like, you know, a customer would go, "Hey, I want to know what is going on with my cable," you know, like that. So basically, I would have to, you know, check the customer's account and see if the customer had paid the cable bill, for starters. That could be a reason why it wasn't working. Walk the customer through those troubleshooting steps. Turn off your cable box. Turn it back on.
What does that mean? Walk through troubleshooting.
When you guide someone through a process, mm-hmm. like, okay, unplug your cable box, wait 10 seconds, plug it back mm-hmm. in, now push this button. So we would do that kind of work. And after that, if the problem wasn't solved still, then we would schedule via the system a technician's visit. So the person could go there.
What's a technician?
It's the guy, the cable guy that comes to your house to fix it. Yeah, so that was pretty much what the job entailed.
What does it mean if a job entails something?
What the job involved? What was involved mm-hmm. in doing the job? It was a really nice experience for myself professionally and also as an English speaker, because I was speaking to yeah. Americans 6 hours a day, 6 days a week, you know.
I imagine if you were helping Brazilians with their cable and you were speaking Portuguese all day, it might have felt a bit less glamorous than it was being in English and speaking to Americans.
Oh, but you know what, Ethan? Even though it was 100% in English, it wasn't that glamorous. Yeah.
It wasn't glamorous.
Because...
Yeah.
It wasn't glamorous because...
You're getting people's garbage.
Yeah, you would just handle problems and complaints. Mm-hmm. And it was 6 hours straight. We had only 15-minute break, a 15-minute break only. Mm-hmm. And there was a floor supervisor who was always walking around. So if, you know, you were not on a call, you would get, you know, told off immediately. Yeah. So the idea was you end a call, you have to jump in on the next one right away. Yeah. You can't just, you know, take a 10-minute break. Yeah. Before the next call. So yeah, it was a little bit tough in that sense.
No lollygagging, I suppose.
Lollygagging. I like that.
Means you're fooling around. You're not doing what you're supposed to. You're not working. You're not doing your homework, whatever the case is. And you mentioned a couple of nice things too. You said the floor supervisor. So is that someone who supervises the floor? They just look at the floor all day?
I don't know if I said it correctly, but it's the person who is walking around just observing the mm-hmm. operations. Eh? We didn't have cubicles. It was an open space. Yeah, we would sit next to each other. So there was a person walking on the floor, just, you know, making sure mm-hmm. that we were talking to customers.
You used it correctly. It's an interesting use of floor. In that case, it's like the factory floor or the floor of the center, just meaning the area of that. And you also said you'd get told off by your supervisor. What does that mean if your supervisor, your manager, your boss tells you off?
Yeah, when they call your attention because you are doing something wrong or something you're not supposed to. So yeah, it wasn't a glamorous job, but it was definitely helpful in my career. But Ethan, I'm actually curious about your experience with your first job. Do you have any to share with us?
Sure. My first job was, I believe I was 17. And I worked as a busboy in a Greek restaurant because I was saving up to, it was before my first experience studying abroad, and I wanted to have some spending money for, I was going to be living with a family and have all of my basics taken care of, but, you know, for if I went to do things with friends or if I wanted to travel or anything like that, that I'd have a bit of spending money.
Ethan, I think it's nice to define that word because, you know, I think most, not most, but many viewers here might think that you actually used to work on a bus, the transportation. Is that the case? Did you work on a bus?
We have there's a very specific use of this word bus as a verb, which means to bus tables, which basically means that you are collecting the glasses, the dirty plates, you're wiping it down, And I would also, I don't know if this is always a responsibility of busboys, but for example, when people would first arrive, I would take their drink orders. So before the waiter came over and asked them, told them about the specials for the day and took their main order. This also isn't a very glamorous job, I have to say.
I guess most first jobs are not, right? you have little experience, right? You get paid not so well. Is it different from being a waiter? Being a busboy versus being a waiter? Is it different?
Yeah, it's a more, we could say a more junior position. Sounds more like you're talking about a business than a restaurant, but generally it'll be young people. That was also my brother's first job, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a common one because it's pretty simple. There's not much you can screw up. I did have a very demanding boss though. And when we'd get the lunch crowd, you'd get the busy time of day, she would just get very stressed out and she would pass that stress along to the waiters and to me, to the busboy, to pretty much everyone else of like, you know, you need to hurry up. You need to like be over there. That table needs this. That table needs that. And it's just like, you know, calm down, like take it easy. People can, they can wait 1 minute to get their drink. It's not the end of the world and everything. But it just would be during the lunch rush, it would cause this kind of buzzing situation of everyone running around trying to do things as fast as possible that was not so pleasant. And I remember one time I got blamed for someone else, like broke some glasses, but I got blamed for it because it was in my station. Someone probably was like rushing to like pick up or drop some glasses there and broke them. So that wasn't so fun.
You know, I think that first jobs like that, though, especially those that are not so glamorous, they are great at teaching us how the world works and how the world sometimes is not fair. Yeah, so as a young person who is, you know, in their late teens, it's a great experience for you to see how things actually work. Yeah, and how life sometimes is unfair.
Putting up with someone's BS and not taking it personally.
Oh, I can take that opportunity to ask the questions then. So I wanted to ask about demanding because you said that you had a demanding boss. So first of all, what does that mean to have a demanding boss? And what does it mean to put up with someone's BS?
That's actually a good one, demanding, because I think in some languages, demand can be like order. So in a restaurant, in English, we order things. We don't demand things from the waiter, from the kitchen.
I want a burger now.
You might, maybe if you're really hangry, if you're hungry and angry, you might be demanding that you get your food instantly. But in English, demand means that you're asking for something right this instance, or you're asking for something with a strong emotion behind it. And this was the case of her, that she would have the stress. And so she would be kind of barking out orders to all the staff, to the waiters, to me. And you said, put up with someone's BS. So BS is bullshit. Yeah. Which bullshit is like something that makes no sense, foolishness. Or even in this case, bullshit could be just someone acting in a way that you don't approve of or you don't understand so well. And to put up with something is to tolerate it, basically. So trying not to let her stress me out and just going along with my job and getting it done, you know?
Nice. You said something else just now. So I got to point it out because that was an awesome, I guess, phrasal verb. Barking out orders. So a dog barks, right? Is the sound a dog makes. What does it mean when a person barks out orders?
Yeah, that is a great one. And again, if you have the boss who is saying, do this, do that, they're barking out orders. And we probably use that. Oftentimes, you will relate people to animals when you want to give a sort of emphasize the negative behavior. So for example, we also could say to pig out. Means when someone is just eating excessively, right? You might do this, maybe you've been on a diet for several weeks and then, you know, you're off your diet, you're going to pig out that first day. You're going to have all those things that you couldn't have the last few weeks on your diet.
Ethan, I wanted to ask you another question about your experience, at this job. Being a busboy for a while, did that teach you any life lesson? Did you learn anything like for life? Did you take away something for your life from that experience?
Yes, I learned I did not want to work in a restaurant.
We can, you know, cross that item that off the list, right? I'm not going to work at a restaurant.
That's exactly that. That's a good lesson, is to know what you don't want to do. One more serious thing is that it makes me more appreciative. In general, when I eat out, I try to be understanding. When I notice the place is really busy, I try to be kind to the waiter, not be someone who's demanding and causing them more stress than they need to have, tipping well as well. I think anyone who works in a restaurant in the United States gets in good habits of tipping well. Another habit I have is when we eat out a lot of times, if there's several different plates, I'll already stack them. So the person just has to come over and grab the stack. They don't have to come and stack them themselves. That's something also my sister-in-law does because she worked for years as a waitress when she was in university.
So you become more empathetic, right? Or sympathetic towards
waiters,
people who work at restaurants, right?
I was going to say that about your position as well, because you're working customer service. And that's something too that oftentimes we take for granted, that when you're calling about some problem you're having, you'll take it out on the person who's on the receiving end of it. You'll take that stress out or that negative experience out. But it's not that we really need to remind ourselves, it's not that person's fault. They're just doing their job and they're having to take this shit all day from different people. So just being that person who's extra friendly when they tell you their name at the beginning, like even repeating their name, saying good morning, you know, being polite, it probably just makes a bit of a difference in their day compared to all the people who are just taking out on them all the whatever they're struggling with.
Yeah, that's true. And that's a lesson that I got from that experience as well. Like nowadays I'm more understanding and more patient, right, with CS agents like that. And even though we were supposed to troubleshoot or help solve problems, we were also supposed to push products to our customers. Yeah, sometimes, hey, are you happy with your current service? Always trying to get them to upgrade. So I also understand that more nowadays when somebody is on the phone trying to sell me something, instead of getting mad at the person, I think, okay, it's the person's job. The person is supposed to be doing this. Somebody else is telling the person to, you know, the person probably has a quota to meet. So, you know, yeah, it makes them more, I guess, patient with people.
Be kind, right?
Be kind, yes.
There's a great book, which is How to Win Friends and Influence People. I believe you've also read this book at some point. I think that's one of the things that it talks about is remembering people's names and just being a person who smiles, being someone who's kind, being interested in other people. So I'll use that to wrap up today's episode, because you're going to share a really great resource for people who want to read more books but maybe don't have a lot of time. So what is that, Thiago?
Oh yeah, it's an app/website called Short Form, guys. Short Form. Short Form is a great service. They provide book summaries. And they are not shallow book summaries. The summaries are actually pretty awesome because they are really detailed. And the cool thing about their service, I find, is that not only are the summaries well written, but also they cross-pollinate from other books that talk about similar ideas. Even they add their own comments on that idea that you are reading from the book. So if you don't have much time to read entire books, this app, Short Form, might be a great solution for you. And it's a great way to practice your English as well. So reading book summaries could be helpful in our case.
So if you're the kind of person who's very demanding when you eat out in a restaurant, or you're managing people, you're very demanding of them, maybe you can pick up the summary of How to Win Friends and Influence People. Or that's a great one just if you want to connect with more people. For example, if you want to speak English on the Real Life English app and you're one of those people who feel kind of awkward, I definitely feel this way, opening up, breaking the ice with someone, then that can be a great read. And we talk about books all the time here, so you might want to check out the summary and see, is it worth me reading the whole book? Can I already get enough out of that?
Exactly, yeah. It's been invaluable for my learning.
So guys, hope you got a lot out of today's podcast. Hopefully you feel a bit more confident about your current level, the level you might want to achieve, whether or not you should be studying to reach for new heights, and maybe you're even reflecting about how you can be kinder the next time you eat out at a restaurant or next time you need to call for customer service. And if you are enjoying these lessons, a free way that you can support us so that we can bring you more dynamite content like this is by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to this. So that could be an Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else that gives you that capability. And if you're using this on the app, you could also leave us a 5-star review in the Apple App Store. So all of these things help us to reach more learners, help more people to learn and grow and discover the world. So remember that no matter what divides us, that which unites us is far greater. 1, 2, 3. Aww, yeah.
Hey again, I hope you enjoyed today's lesson. Don't be a stranger. You can find all the notes like vocabulary, links, and more for this lesson on our blog at reallifeglobal.com. And connect with us and on Instagram at reallife.english for even more fun English recommendations. Do you want to continue your learning and get confident, fluent English? Check out our YouTube channel, Learn English with TV Series, where you can have fun learning to understand fast-speaking natives with your favorite movies, series, and more without getting lost, without missing the jokes, and without subtitles. Finally, if you are enjoying our podcast, then please assist us in helping more people go beyond the classroom and live their English. You can do this by sending a link to this podcast to a friend or by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you are listening. We might even shout you out on the podcast. Stay healthy and safe, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Aw, yeah.